From the Lynn Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of May, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com. We'll hear an excerpt of this morning's Illinois Extension update of field crops across the state, and we'll check in on the weather forecast to that with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at $7.72¾, finished 13 and a quarter cents higher. The July up 13 and a half at $7.32¼ a bushel. And December futures at $6.36½, up 11. March corn at $6.40, 11 and three quarters higher. May soybeans, old crop up 15 and a half at $16.21. July 15.89 and three quarters, up 20 and a quarter. New crop November beans, 24 and a half higher at $14.33½. Bean meal futures at $4.42½, up $14.80, and the bean oil 13 cents higher at $66.38 for the day. July wheat soft red up 8½ at $7.61¾ in the harvest month, and the hard red July a dime higher at $7.36¾. Live cattle futures finished the June at $116.02 per 100 pounds. That's up 55 cents. May feeder cattle at $131.72½, $1.25 higher. The August were up 87 and a half at $144.27½, and June lean hogs today down $1.62½ at $112.85. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com, now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Great afternoon to you, Friday, Todd.
Boy, it was just a wild and interesting day in Chicago. We have a whole lot to talk about. There was that swoon in the middle of the day. I want to get back to that. But do you have an upside target for December corn?
Yeah, I mean, technically there is something to be able to look at now, because we talked last week about how the charts on the new crop look like double top formations potentially, and that we needed to come in and either confirm that by taking out support lines or negate that by taking out the old highs. And the latter was what was happening in the trade mindset. Thankfully, to the Brazilians, we can give a big hearty handshake for a lot of that. And we can go to that more detail in a second. But if you take the March 30th low of 449.5 in December corn and the April 27th high, that was a rally of $1.43½ plus or minus. And so if you start using a Fibonacci retracement or swing objective on that mindset of $1.43½ level, and you take the very next day's low of 428 of around 537¼, you're talking about anywhere from 591, 609, and then 680¾. 680¾ obviously is our target now. We've gone through the other two, and that 680¾ is a 100% swing objective target off of that 537 low. So I talked to clients this week about the 670 to 680 level as the next objective to try and get hedges in place on Dease corn. Would love to have that happen before the crop report next week.
Do you think we can get that done?
I think we should be able to, Todd, because the situation in Brazil is, I think we can use the word in Paraná as dire, and that comes from contacts this week. Again, my weekly conversation with my colleague in Buenos Aires, he had talked to some farmers in southwest of Paraná, and he said, look, if we've gone 40 consecutive days without rain, and this is a crop that got started late to begin with, so you're seeing 90 plus degree temperatures, no rain for almost two straight months now. And he said, if this keeps up much longer, then we'll lose 50% of our crop. And that's a decent estimate as far as a high confidence level loss. So, yeah, I think the momentum traders probably can get us there. I think we should hedge, though. The main reason why is because the crop estimates that came out from the news wires, I thought they were pretty disappointing. Only 77 million less bushels for U.S. ending stocks for this current marketing year in corn, and only 2 million less in beans and wheat. Golly, at, you know, 770 front end corn and $16 front end beans and 770 front end wheat, I think the trade's priced in a lot bigger cut in carryover than what we're looking at on the estimates.
How much will USDA adjust on Wednesday?
That's a good question, but I can tell you my price model would say at 770 corn, you're at around a 950 carryover for 2021, like the 2020-21 old crop, current marketing year, below 100 million bushels probably at $16 beans, and probably around a 750 carryover at 770 wheat prices in the soft red futures. That's something I'm going to really look at and describe and explain why I feel that way with clients and subscribers this weekend on copy.
So now back to the trade today, because somebody got their head handed to them, or the bears and the bulls had quite the battle, and it was just fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think this is where the roles come into play. You know, it is the 6th of and 7th of May. This is when some of those commodity fund roles happen. And I think, simply put, we had gone up so fast on some of these markets that the market needed to test the resolve of the bull. And what the pressure came from, I think, originally this week was the idea that the bear spread was starting to take hold in the corn market. And notice the soft red wheat after today's close, it's at a carrying charge as we get ready for the expiration of the May futures on the 14th. So right after that report comes out, May goes off the board, and now wheat's back to a carry. So I think the bears tried to push the bulls around a little bit because of the weakening spreads, and the bulls just said, none of this, because we just sold our 7th biggest one-time sale to China in the history of record keeping from a USDA perspective with that weekly export sales for new crop that was announced today. So I think we just simply tested the resolve of the bull, and I think maybe we saw some fund rolling also take hold here.
So just to kind of recap really quickly, you think by the time we get to Wednesday of next week, potentially 670, 680, December futures, and that you would do some hedging at that point. And then, depending on what USDA says, maybe done until we get to a weather market for the United States?
Yeah, I think I'll be in put roll-up mindset, kind of like last year at this time with the soybeans, where we just didn't know what the crop was going to be. We didn't know what the weather was going to be. And I think these models, very quickly, we have to realize that if we see a decent progress number again on Monday, these models are pushing a lot of precip into the middle part of the country for the rest of May. So there goes your drought concerns, in my opinion, for now. So I do get more concerned about the second half of May if these trade estimates are met by USDA's numbers. I mean, if USDA comes in almost a 1.3 billion bushel carryover, I don't know why the trade wouldn't sit back and say, well, why'd we do this $1.50 rally if we've rationed that much corn? And, you know, that's really where it sits, is because that's the name of the game, is let's ration this corn.
Hey, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzalo. He's with GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Each Friday, University of Illinois Extension field crop specialists gather for a morning roundtable to discuss happenings around the state. I joined them today. This morning, Emerson Napsiger kicked off our talk.
We made progress this last week in getting planted, and corn was 54% as of Sunday, which is just a little bit ahead of normal. May 1 is about our 50% date for corn. We're considerably ahead on soybeans. We were 41% planted on soybeans as of Sunday, when I think our 50% plant date on soybeans is somewhere May 21, 22, something like that, if you just look at it over the years. So it obviously has a pretty wide variability. But 7% of the soybean crop was emerged, and I believe 14% of the corn crop. So a greater percent of the corn crop is up than soybeans. And we certainly hope those rest of those soybeans are coming up, but the return of cool temperatures is really disappointing. We sort of saw this coming, and it was, 40 degrees this morning, and supposed to be colder tomorrow morning. So cool temperatures this time of May give us concerns. It's been looking back, we hope it ends up being a good planting season, but it's one of the oddest ones that we've seen. As I've said to you last week, the idea would be to have temperatures come up into at least normal. And right now it looks like all this next week, our highs are going to be in the 60s. And we're into the single digit growing degree day accumulations per day. And, you know, so the average in May is about 100 a week. And we're not going to get there at 6 and 8 per day. I have heard some talk this week about poor soybean stands in some places. I think I mentioned that, you know, the conditions in which soybeans were planted into ground that had been tilled in the fall and probably worked earlier in the spring, maybe, or just tilled enough to be about ready to plant last fall, didn't really, you know, dry out particularly well before they planted it. It wasn't muddy wet, but it was wet enough that lack of rainfall after it was worked this spring meant that it wasn't the best conditions in the world. So we're going to keep our optimism going, but there may be in some of your areas some kind of difficult decisions, particularly on soybeans, but I wouldn't rule out corn as well in terms of what stands are up, what are still going to come up. You know, these are going to be the kinds of questions that people will have.
That was Emerson Knapsaker speaking to the Illinois Extension Field Crops Folks weekly meeting this morning. He expressed concern last week during that meeting that soybean could have emergence issues given cool soil and air temperatures. He did so again today, as you just heard. And Knapsaker is an agronomist. The field crops entomologist for Illinois Extension is Nick Sider. He says there aren't many insect issues to deal with at the moment, but had a few updates today.
In terms of the insect update around the state, did hear a report from John Pike down in southern Illinois that they were seeing a little bit of cutworm chewing in some areas. All larvae that were, of course, too small to be cutting, but something they were, he encouraged us to be on the lookout for when we hit those cutting dates, which should be coming in the next couple of weeks. Those seedling pests in general, you know, with these cool conditions that we've had, certainly ought to be vigilant for those right now. I've seen more pictures of seed corn maggot this year than I ever have in the past. Haven't got big reports of stand loss from seed corn maggot, but certainly I've had several folks letting me know that they're seeing those out there. And of course, the adults should no longer be active at this point. Some of that damage could be occurring right now in some of these plants that are slow to come up.
This is Emerson. We had people online this morning with soybean extension people, and both of the bean leaf beetle and the seed corn maggots came up. And one person that asked about seed corn was in central Illinois, and he said he has got quite a bit of it. I think it was somebody from Michigan that said they often, whenever they see that, it's typically in a field that had manure hauled on it.
Yeah.
This person in central Illinois said that it had been tilled 2 days before, but didn't have any manure on it. And
and a lot of times it's that combination of that activity and planting right after it while those flies are active. So there's kind of a relatively brief window of time where if you plant right after tillage, you can get burned even if you don't have manure. But the most common situation for having issues with seed corn maggot is where you have manure incorporation. It doesn't always have to be manure, for sure.
They also talked about bean leaf beetle. And I guess what I learned from the entomologists that are here in bygone years, you know, they never saw bean leaf beetle as very much of a threat to soybean stand.
You know, I've never seen them take out stand, and I've seen some plants that are pretty tore up. That defoliation typically around here is cosmetic. Yeah. What can happen sometimes, if you have a population that's carrying that bean pod model virus, and they, you know, if you get that going in the plants, then you can have some issues from it. And that's where where management of those bean leaf beetles early in the season has been showed to maybe provide a benefit is in those situations where you've got bean pod mottle virus in the system.
Nick Sider is an extension entomologist. He spoke at this morning's Field Crops Extension update of conditions across the state of Illinois. Thanks to Nick and Emerson for agreeing to allow me to let you hear some of that program this afternoon. Well, let's check the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here from Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. Thanks for joining the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Okay, let's start with Mother's Day weekend, because moms probably would like some sunshine, maybe, I suppose, on Sunday. It seems like a good thing for them. What do we look like? Because I also kind of need to know about the rainfall across the whole of the Corn Belt in the process, too.
Well, there's just kind of bad news all around in that regard, I guess. And I wish we could dial back up the weather we had on Easter. That would have been great to have here on Mother's Day. But unfortunately, we're going to watch precip try to get across the state here on Saturday night. And then really just there's going to be a front. It might sit right on I-70, where if you're north of it, we're going to be in the wind and in the rain, no sunshine, cold, disgusting. So everybody listening right now, make reservations to take mom out to lunch. Don't plan on barbecuing. It will not be fun to do that right here in the central part of Illinois. It's just this little front's going to slide through, and it's kind of pouring out of the Dakotas. So they're going to get some precip in the western Dakotas. Remember, western Dakotas is where I'm watching this. And then as it kind of pulls into center part of the United States, it's going to really hang south of I-80. So the really dry conditions in Iowa are going to persist in the northern part of Iowa, but better precip to the south. And then it just kind of comes right through us. And that's just round one. We got another shot coming through next week as well. So it's getting wet around here again. And unfortunately, it comes in right on a holiday.
Well, how wet exactly?
Well, between the multiple rounds, the probability of us getting in excess of an inch of rain through the next week is about 80%. So that, I mean, that's right here in the heart of Illinois, right in the center part of the state. So we've got a decent chance out of these next two systems to pack back in another inch. But going over to the Mid-South, Lower Mississippi River Valley, you know, that area, which has been extremely wet this year, they're going to get more rain down there too. And I was just talking to a guy down there. One of the biggest problems they're having with the crop is they got it in the Lower Mississippi River Valley from, you know, southern Illinois all the way to the Gulf. Problem is they've not been able to get back in and side dress any nitrogen. So guys are telling me corn's coming up, but it is as yellow as could be because they haven't been able to get in there and get more of that field work done.
On the flip side, it's been really dry in Iowa. Will they get very much?
Well, like we said, north of I-80, not much. And remember, when we look at the stats from April for Iowa, 13th driest April for them, and that is in the last 127 years. And you go north of that. So let's go now into the Red River Valley of the north, then head over toward Minnesota, Wisconsin. Those states are not forecast to receive much of anything, may actually go through the next 10 days almost completely dry. And so we start to just get concerned about the expanding drought out of the Dakotas, and where we right now have exceptional drought across the state.
I want to come back to that, but the Dakotas, Iowa, even here has been cold. Will that break anytime soon?
Well, yeah, this is kind of the other piece of bad news. We're going to possibly get a frost tomorrow. Not us right here in Champaign in this area, but coming out of the Red River Valley of the north through Minnesota, Wisconsin, possibly clipping northern Illinois, but then almost all of lower Michigan, northern part of Indiana, northern part of Ohio, that's a big part of the eastern Corn Belt I just talked about there, could get an early morning temp that hits that 32. So this is not what we had a year ago on almost the exact same date where Fort Wayne, Indiana hit 18 degrees Fahrenheit. That's what it did in 2020. We're talking about just dinging it right there early in the morning for the sun rises at 32, and we may have another shot at that next Tuesday. Now we'll see our overnight lows in the 30s here. In central Illinois, but in the upper 30s. And then this pattern all breaks about 7 days from now. And it appears right now, if I were to use the European model as guidance, that the pattern we do break into is going to be one that's going to pile in some heat, which we would love to see. But we're talking about seeing that after the 14th, 15th, you know, getting out there past mid-month.
Does it pile in wet as well with the heat, or is it dry?
Well, the models are always in May. When you bring in heat, they're always going to open up the Gulf. And unfortunately, the models, when they do that, often over-predict on the precipitation the farther north you go. So if I were talking to a group in North Dakota, they would look at a map and say, wow, I see wetter than average conditions. And I'd say, just pull back, because it's been trying to do that for the last month and it's not materialized. But I would expect the Central Plains getting into the Midwest and over through the Mid-South and Southeast to start seeing, like we had seen earlier, more severe weather. And that's just the time of year it is, and that's how the moisture is often delivered this time of year.
Rather than weather, let's deal with climate. Come back to the drought and what conditions really are like across the United States, please. Is there any new information?
Well, we had a new drought monitor that was released, but I wanted to really compare that to the longer-term statistics. And so the new statewide temperature ranks and precipitation ranks maps came out. In North Dakota, when you go from last October through this April, has had the driest weather on record for them. And those data go back 127 years. The West Coast, California, top five over that time period. I mean, it's just been very, very dry. And as a consequence, we're going to continue to have our drought worries on into the future. Now, we could beat that drought back over the next couple of weeks in the central U.S. and in the Midwest over to the eastern Corn Belt. But we're always going to have this thought lingering in the back of our mind. If there's all that drought west now, what does it do to the summer jet stream position? If it shoves it north, well, that's exactly what happened in some pretty key years like 83, 88, and 12. And we just start thinking about that as a potential outcome of this. But nothing's set in stone. So we won't use those years as an analog, but just something I'm going to watch carefully.
Are there any long-range forecasts for the summer?
Yeah, the European model released its new seven-month outlook late in the night on the 5th. And so what we got here is a new look at summer in June, July, August. The model's been pretty consistent. And in a nutshell, I'd describe it this way. If you're west of the Mississippi River at this point, the chances of having a hot and potentially dry summer is elevated. At this point, there is no indicator that drought will be cured in the northern plains. East of the Mississippi, we could see a really stormy summer. And that's simply because the storms run over the top of the ridge that'll be anchored maybe around the 100 or 105th meridian. And on this side of the Mississippi, that pattern tends to make us very stormy. We still see a very active hurricane season. The models did not shift on that. And the northwest United States could be very hot and very dry this summer as well. So pretty consistent behavior in the long-term models over the messaging we've had here for the last couple of months.
Speaking of messaging, is there a short message for what's happening in South America, Brazil in particular?
Yeah, unfortunately, that short message is the safrinha crop has very little hope at this point. Rains have tried to get into southern Paraná, but they're just getting into the forest. They're not getting into where they have the farm ground. And then from there through Bahia, Minas Gerais, even all the way up to Mato Grosso, when I look at the next 10 days, I see almost no precipitation. So that crop, which was late, is going to struggle to finish and really probably have the top of it knocked off here in terms of yield and total production.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Stay with us if you can. Commodity Week is up next.